They had taken different paths to get to Beirut. There, each served his or her nation. And they came home together. Once, an American diplomat's greatest worries, at least when it came to his or her personal safety, were disease, natural disasters, even being lost at sea. In fact, that is how most of the people whose names appear here died. It took 187 years to amass 81 names on this memorial plaque. But you can mark where and when an American diplomat's life ceased to be safe, striped-pants diplomacy, if it ever was, by reading the companion plaque at the other end of this lobby. They no longer inscribe just how the country's foreign affairs personnel died, but most of the 43 names honored here were killed in action by terrorists. And most of the names that will, in a matter of months or a very few years, fill out this plaque will have died the same way. Terrorism is the modern disease and disaster which threatens this nation's diplomats and the world. For now, the landmark is Beirut. At least 50 Lebanese and Americans were killed or injured. Never, never have so many U.S. Foreign Service personnel died or been injured in one incident. Some were working for the CIA. Some were in the military. Some were career Foreign Service officers, part of the State Department. But on this morning, when someone drove a vehicle filled with high explosives into the driveway of the embassy, all but one of the Americans, a freelance journalist, were working for the United States.
Look, the ambassador is going to make a statement.
Undoubtedly, the terrorist had hoped to seriously affect the work of the United States. But only those who were severely injured paused for more than a few hours before they were once again back in action.
We've got to continue our efforts for a broader peace process in the area, and we've got to continue our efforts to assist this government in taking authority and responsibility for the entire country, every inch of it.
And it was a message echoed and intensified as the nation began mourning its KIAs.
Let us hear in their presence serve notice to the cowardly, skulking barbarians in the world that they will not have their way. Your loved ones serve their country with talent and energy, courage and commitment. They knew the road they traveled was hard and fraught with peril. And they walked that road with cool professionalism and a deep sense of purpose.
That same deep sense of purpose brought many of these people to Andrews Air Force Base on a damp Saturday when their colleagues came home. It is what brought most of them to the Foreign Service in the first place. People like Dennis Hayes, 7 years a diplomat and head of the Foreign Service Association.
Foreign Service is a small enough organization where we all know somebody. If you get 10, 12 people, somebody has a very good friend, a classmate, who is going to be at that post. So it hits us pretty personally. Question of the danger and the threat, I mean, it's always there. And this thing that happened in Beirut, it's not the first incident in Beirut. It's the first one that's had this kind of consequence. I mean, there's been 4 rocket attacks on the embassy in the last 3 or 4 years.
The day after their dead colleagues came home, Hayes and a group of his friends in the Foreign Service got together to talk with us about the hazards of diplomacy.
You can't dwell on, you know, personal safety, or this might happen to me, otherwise you wouldn't be effective. You couldn't operate.
I don't think we think about it. I mean, when you're in Paris or Beirut, you're not thinking somebody's going to shoot you or they're going to blow you up. You're just there doing your job.
It's just, you know, it's part of the, if you're going to worry about that, you better get out of this business. Because sooner or later, you know, I count the number of people who something has happened to, either...
It is not fatalism, not bravado. Those are the words of extremely bright, dedicated, and patriotic public servants, the kind many Americans have forgotten really exists. And these people, these would-be peacemakers, know what may await them. Since the mid-1960s, terrorist incidents have been happening with alarming and deadly frequency, and not just to mid-level diplomats. 5 United States ambassadors have been killed in action. Gordon Mine in Guatemala. Cleo Knoll in the Sudan. Roger Davies died in Cyprus. Francis Molloy Jr., 1976 in Lebanon. Adolf Spike Dubs in Afghanistan. Compare that number, 5, with another one. In the entire Vietnam War, only 7 American generals were killed in action.
There's a saying that diplomatic immunity can keep you from getting a parking ticket, but it can't keep you from getting shot. And it's true. I mean, diplomatic immunity is only good to the extent that the other person recognizes that immunity. And obviously terrorists could care less.
You can't really protect against an incident in which the people who perpetrate the incident are prepared to give their lives for it.
Ambassador Robert Sayre is a diplomatic veteran of South America. He now heads the State Department Office for Combating Terrorism. What goes through your mind when you're sitting here heading the Office for Combating Terrorism and word is flashed to you of such incidents as the one in Beirut?
Well, you're shocked. You're kind of devastated. And you tend to ask the kinds of questions you're asking. But when you realize something like this is a skirmish in the big effort you're making, you just have to immediately react and decide that you're going to carry on and do what has to be done, and that some of your colleagues and friends are no longer with you.
The obvious questions are, why was the embassy in such a high-profile location, and was the building safe enough? Tom Tracy is the Assistant Secretary for Administration for the State Department. His main task is making American embassies more secure places.
There is no way, short of building a bunker, that you can really make an embassy or any other building completely bomb-proof.
The bombed building, once a hotel, had been leased by the State Department since 1958. The United States was building its own, much heavier embassy in Beirut, but construction stopped in 1976 when a civil war endangered the lives of the construction workers. Whether it would have meant fewer or no people killed under the same circumstances is questionable.
But there is simply, in the end, no way of getting around the fact that the host government must provide a measure of protection to diplomatic establishments.
Tom Tracy is talking about what international law calls for. We are talking about outlaws, terrorist groups, or sometimes governments. And no one knows that better than Gary Lee, who learned it in another dangerous place. I did my own. Listen carefully to him.
But no, we had a good pass-through system. The system worked where I built it.
Yeah, but where do you go after the building falls?
Oh, I went out in the streets and got captured. That was it. I had a slight problem. The whole country was after me.
So Gary Lee and 51 other Americans spent 14 months imprisoned, held as hostages of the Iranian government. He is still in the Foreign Service, and when you listen to him, you can't help but feel that the United States is very lucky that he is.
There's something about the U.S. government, those of us that work it and live it, and we spend most of our lives totally obscure. Occasionally we show up. The only time we show up is when there's a tragedy. Near tragedy in my case, complete tragedy in the Beirut case. But I think that the Foreign Service, and I'm speaking, I hope, for those that are sitting in this room and perhaps others, we believe in what we do. We believe in our government, and we believe in what we stand for. I think what we're doing is the best we can do under circumstances that are recently becoming very, very difficult.
Today, the United States has diplomatic representatives in more than 140 countries. And what is both surprising and encouraging is that despite the increased risk to their own personal safety, today more Americans are anxious to represent this country abroad than ever before. In 1982, 17,000 people, more than ever before, applied to join the Foreign Service. A good place to see some of those idealistic Americans is at the country's oldest and largest school of foreign service at Georgetown University. Listen to how lucky the United States is. Listen to George Dumar, class of 83, reflect on Beirut.
It didn't affect me at all. I'm sorry that it happened, and it's an unfortunate event, and it's tragic, but it's going to occur again. Certainly at certain points, and I can't do anything to stop that, but you know, it's just up to me if it's something I want to do, and I can serve my country and do a good job and for my country and achieve something for myself, then I think that shouldn't interfere with my goals and aspirations in that area.
So without any of the weapons of war, they go into battle every day. They ask questions, such as why was the Shah led into the United States when they had warned against it? They ask why Beirut was taken off the State Department's extreme hazardous duty list just last summer. They ask with a believing innocence which belies their hard-edged experience, why have I become a symbol and a target? And they wonder if the peacemaker is truly blessed, as it is written in St. Matthew. And you cannot spend any amount of time with them, these Foreign Service professionals, without coming away feeling better about the country. Better because they are there.
When it's all said and done, and you look back on your life, I think Foreign Service officers look back and say, I did something that made a difference in the way the world turns. And that's maybe it. It isn't financial reward. It's the ability to be there when something constructive is being done. So much in the world is destructive. So many other countries do not take the leadership role that maybe they should. We do take it seriously in a place like Lebanon. We make the difference. If we don't do it, who is going to do it?